Welcome, everybody, to this edition of the World Soccer Talk podcast. I'm your host, Richard Farley. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm here with my normal co-host, Kartik Krishnayar, still filling in for Nipun Chopra, who is in India for the next few weeks. I'm going to be taking you into May. And by then, Kartik, the title race in the Premier League may be decided. But for this show, let's start outside the Premier League. Let's talk about the FA Cup semifinals. Two very entertaining matches this weekend. Manchester United with a 2-1 victory on Saturday over Everton booked their place in the final. They'll be facing Crystal Palace, who was vaulted into the final on Sunday with a 2-1 victory over Watford. Kartik, let's take them chronologically and talk about Manchester United versus Everton. A very entertaining match in this one.
Yeah, Everton were very, very poor in the first half. To their credit, they came up in the second half, played with much more attacking intent. Lukaku's finishing touch eluded him, including from the penalty spot. Great save by De Gea there, but much more impetus from Everton. But unfortunately, you would have liked to have seen that from the get-go in this game, and you didn't. And given Everton's need to win a trophy, to win a cup, that they have nothing else to play for in the season, their league place is pretty much cemented. They're not going to qualify for Europe by virtue of league place. It was a very disappointing performance. Yes, they played well for about 35 minutes, but not well enough. And rightfully, Manchester United advances to the final.
It's hard for me to ignore the big picture issues around this game, even though we should probably talk a little bit about Manchester United on the brink of a trophy. We'll do that in a second, because throughout the course of this year's worth of shows, this year that you and I are back together doing this show for the first time in 3 or 4 years, you have been very consistent in your assessment of Roberto Martinez. It hasn't been a vitriolic assessment. It hasn't been, I don't think, overly critical, but you have expressed doubt throughout the year. And now, after Everton being excused from this competition in the semifinals after a somewhat poor performance, although I think it's a little bit debatable. A lot of people were blaming Romelu Lukaku for some missed chances. Regardless, like you mentioned, they were on the cusp of some much-needed silverware, and they've come up 2 steps short. It really seems like the focus is now turning to Roberto Martinez. What's your assessment of him? Do you think Everton should move on?
Oh, they have to at this point. I mean, I think you've seen him lose a lot of the players. I think you've seen regression from guys defensively. They were surviving for a long time because of Lukaku's goals. And one thing that can go away is goal scoring rather quickly. If you're not fundamentally sound at the back, we see this with our league leaders, Leicester City. Their goal scoring, eventually Vardy and Mahrez stopped scoring goals. They picked up again now. But There was a stretch where they stopped scoring goals, but then they were keeping clean sheets, and they stayed right there at the top of the table or second or third the whole time. Never fell out of the top four. Leicester, I don't think, has fallen out of the top four the entire season. Everton, by contrast, stopped scoring goals, and because you're so defensively challenged fundamentally, huge gaps between center backs, the full backs in the wrong position, and some of it are the players, right? Some of it is that Leighton Baines is clearly regressed. He's come off an injury. He's not defending very well. He's out of position a lot. Some of that Roberto Martinez can't control, right? But some of it he can. And there's been tinkering with formations, 3-5-2, which he liked at Wigan, going back to a 4-4-2, going back to a 4-2-3-1 at times, and it just hasn't worked. It's time to move on for Everton, and I believe they will.
I've definitely come around on this one. When we did that mid-season show about best managers in the Premier League, I think you had Roberto Martinez around 12 or 13 or so. I had him at like 7 or 8. And since we've been talking about this, I have really come around to your way of thinking on things, and I think I was just late in evaluating Martinez, or maybe I had a bias. But while I wouldn't say that he needs to go, it's hard for me to think about things in those terms, in this case at least. I think they would be perfectly justified moving on, given where they are in the table, given how the team has closed out the season in a very unconvincing way. And if they are going to sell Romelu Lukaku this summer, they may need to ask themselves who they want reinvesting that money. Who do they want building their next squad? And it might not be Roberto Martinez. Let's talk about Manchester United here. I can't remember who it was. It might have been, was it Van Gaal or Michael Carrick? I can't remember who. But somebody from Manchester United's team saying that if they win the FA Cup, they can look at this as a successful season. I want to ask you about that, because that seems like the same logic we've been trying to apply to Arsenal for these last few years, logic that we've kind of scoffed at. Of course, the one big difference is Arsenal was winning FA Cups while still finishing in the top four.
Right. Whereas here, Manchester United. Now, I should point out, if Manchester United does win out in the league,
right,
and there is a winner between Arsenal and Manchester City, whoever wins that game, not a draw, then Manchester United will qualify for the Champions League next year, regardless of FA Cup or any of that. Now, that having been said, their next game is against Leicester City, so that just gives you a little taste that they don't really have they don't have a straightforward run in. Would it be a successful season? No, but I think the FA Cup always kind of confounded me towards the end of Fergie's era, because this was a tournament that I feel had been devalued by Manchester United. We talk about the romance of the cup being dead, and it is dead. I will freely admit to you, and we're going to talk about the second semifinal shortly, that I, along with just about everybody else I know, was watching Leicester City against Swansea at the same time as that FA Cup semifinal. 5 years ago, it doesn't matter if the league leaders are playing in the Premier League, you're probably watching the FA Cup semifinal. If they're running concurrently. So I think that's just a sense of where our priorities have changed. Manchester United was the club that devalued this competition. They're the club that pulled out in 1999. They're the club that continuously played reserve players. Their last final, their last victory, actually I think their last final period was 2004 when they beat Arsenal, but they have not been back to a final since. They often would play reserves. And it was the one thing. Ferguson was continuing to win the league consistently. He won in Europe, got to two more European Cup finals in 2009 and 2011 after winning in 2008. Mm-hmm. Never got back to an FA Cup final after 2004. It just wasn't a priority. Oh, they got to the FA Cup final in 2007. I forgot. And Drogba had that late winner in stoppage time, in extra time. But beyond that, this has not been an important competition for them. They have devalued this competition. They led the way in England among big clubs to devaluing this competition. So I find it very ironic that Louis van Gaal and Manchester United can turn around now and say, well, it's successful if we win this cup. Because part of the reason we look down upon the FA Cup now and see it as a secondary competition was because of the legacy of Manchester United relative to this competition. So, I'm kind of happy that Manchester United is taking this competition seriously. Maybe that'll lead to a revival of the importance of this this cup long term. Though I should remind you that they played against they were very fortunate to get through the first two rounds of this competition against lower division opposition. But no, it doesn't make it a successful season.
We've gotten through talking about this game without mentioning Anthony Martial. Another good game from him, 93rd minute, winning goal in this one, ends up putting the Red Devils through. Let's talk about Sunday's semifinal, another 2-1 result. Crystal Palace going through over Watford, Yannick Bolasie, Connor Wickham with the goals for Crystal Palace, Watford with a goal for Troy Deeney. Just as we did with the other one, let's talk about the losing side of this first, and just as was the case with Everton, controversy, or not controversy, but concern surrounding the manager after this loss, and more stories that hint Kike Sanchez Flores will not be back. The Pozzo family, who made so many coaching changes last year with this club, look like they may not pick up Kike Sanchez Flores' option for next year. Just your reaction to those stories, Kartik. Watford has not been very good this calendar year.
No, I think that they've been poor this calendar year, but what you want to do when you're a club like Watford that has never stayed in the top division, I don't think since the early 80s they've ever, when they've come up, they've stayed up, is get those points early. And Kike Sanchez Flores got those points early. And they were actually probably better than the number of points they had for a large portion of the season. They were performing well. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he really deserves some credit for that. I think he did a very good job organizing this team defensively. Now, eventually, Ighalo and Deeney stopped scoring goals, and they stayed in that 4-4-2 formation. It wasn't working. When he tried to tinker 4-2-3-1, it was a bit of a problem. Really didn't have any other solutions. A lot of mishmash of players, right, that were bought in the last couple of transfer windows, particularly this summer, by I believe Goodayen, who's now managing Swansea, had a lot to do with some of these buys that Watford had. But so Sanchez Flores had a tough job. We know he's a manager that has not lasted very long most places he's been. I think he's a fairly good manager, and he set up the structure and the system that now Simeone is taking to a whole nother level, right? You know, maybe best manager in the world, one of the best clubs in the world with Atletico Madrid. But he set that up. Little takeaway from this game is Etienne Capoue, who has been their best player of the season, looks like a pretty serious injury. Obviously, their games don't matter the rest of the season, but he won't be back this season. And maybe seeing a whole bunch of new teammates and a new manager next year with Watford.
Knowing the Pozzo family consortium, probably. He's been a really great story this year because when he arrived at Tottenham, I think a lot of people saw him as a promising player. And as was the case in the pre-Pochettino Tottenham, he kind of just got lost in the shuffle a little bit. Goes to Watford, has reestablished himself, has been one of the better players at his position, not just one of the best players on his team. So an unfortunate ending to kind of a reaffirming season for Etienne Capoue. Let's talk about Crystal Palace. Let's stick with the manager here because, as is the case for most of the season, Alan Pardew has slightly overshadowed his club, mostly because Alan Pardew has a bit of a narrative to him. And throughout this point in the season, Crystal Palace has fit that narrative where they looked very strong in the first half of the season. Second half struggles has led a lot of people to speculate why Pardew's teams always go through this. The difference here is now that Crystal Palace is in a cup final, people are forgetting that they're in 16th place in the Premier League. People are forgetting that, like Watford, for most of 2016, this team hasn't been that good. I don't know what to think about them, Karthik, because the results they've been getting recently, with the exception of the draw at the Emirates, have been against reasonably poor teams, whether it be Watford or Norwich. At the same time, people are going to remember, no matter where they finish in the league this year, that they got to this cup final.
Right, well, Arsenal at this time of the year, which something's on the line, is a reasonably poor team also. So, I mean, you can't put too much stock in them getting a point against Arsenal at the Emirates. I mean, it was a great result, but I mean, this kind of game.
We saw it again this weekend. I mean, it looked like Arsenal had something turned around midweek, and then they can't beat Sunderland.
Right, and we'll get to that shortly in the show. Yeah, I don't know what to make of this because obviously there was a focus on the FA Cup going on at both Watford and Crystal Palace, which is an odd thing now because, as we said, most top flight teams in England just kind of toss this competition away, led by Manchester United through the years. So. I don't know. It would be quite interesting to see them win the FA Cup and finish 17th in the league or 16th in the league. Especially after having been fifth on Boxing Day. It's just defies all reality because they've won one game in the Premier League since December 14th. One game. And they have won now. They have gotten through third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. They've gotten through five rounds of the FA Cup. So they've won five games in cup competitions and one game in the league over the course of the last 4 months or so. I would challenge some of our historians out there. I guess I'm a historian too, but I don't know that I have the time to do this, to find another example of this in recent history, at least in the Premier League era, where a Premier League team can only win one game in after Boxing Day in the league, but has ripped through the FA Cup. And a lot of the FA Cup matches that Crystal Palace drew, now, of course, they did get by Reading in the last round in the quarterfinals, but everybody else they played have been Premier League clubs. So they're beating Premier League clubs in the FA Cup. It's not just that they were playing League One and League Two teams and got a fortunate draw. They had to go to Southampton. They had to go to – did they go to Spurs?
They were at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, and they've gotten through all these matches. So it's a bizarre thing and maybe just another indication of Pardewing, for lack of a better term.
I also think that this is a good argument for anybody, and this comes up every year from people that are nostalgic for soccer the way it was 20 years ago. Anybody that wants to argue that we should take these cup competitions more seriously, or every once in a while you hear people saying, well, maybe the FA Cup winners should get a Champions League spot. Cup competitions are fun to watch, and they're exciting to see the bracket unfold, and it's interesting to see who the draw favors and who gets bad luck in the draws. But they aren't necessarily representative of who are the best teams in a league are. We can see from the broader sample size, and we can see from the last 5 months of soccer, that Crystal Palace isn't that good of a team. And so to reward the winner of a cup competition with something that a team that plays 38 games and proves themselves to be demonstrably better, that might get their spot taken from them to give it to a cup winner, I don't know. I like the idea that the cup winners get into a Europa League. Europa League's a good tournament. It's not playing for the top prize in Europe. We can be a little bit more lax in who we let in there. But let's not let our romance for these cups fool us into thinking that anybody that wins one of these things is deserving of a Champions League spot. Neither Manchester United nor Crystal Palace, I think, are deserving, even though Manchester United, as you mentioned, still has a really decent chance of getting fourth place in the league. We'll talk about that in a minute. Let's shift to first place in the league, and let's talk about the game that happened on Monday, because, Kartik, I want to hear your reaction to it. Tottenham 1-1 draw at White Hart Lane against West Bromwich Albion. They score in the first half. West Brom gets an equalizer in the second half. Tottenham is now 7 points behind Leicester with 3 games to play. Do we still have a title race in the Premier League?
No. Keep in mind, they have to go. Spurs have to go to Chelsea next week, and Eden Hazard's already gone on record saying that Chelsea would love nothing better. This would be some salvation for their season if they knock Spurs out of the title race. Looks like there's a very real chance they could have that opportunity.
Now you care about results, Chelsea.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about it for a couple of weeks, that if there was one game that Chelsea would get up for, it would be that game.
Yep.
And conversely, you don't want to get into conspiracy theories, although it's probably not going to matter at this point. If there was a game that they wanted to just mail it in, it would probably be the Leicester game, because they don't want Spurs winning the title. Well, it may not matter now, but this game Monday was just, it kind of had that feeling.
Yeah.
Once
they didn't get a second goal, like it just felt different than the Stoke game last week, where
yes,
Tottenham immediately started piling on and it wasn't ever in doubt. Whereas this one, it took them a while to get a first goal and then it lingered there. And then once West Brom came out of halftime and looked better, it kind of, like you said, had that feeling to it.
It had that feeling to it. It didn't from the kickoff, but I would say from about the 20th minute on, it really did. And then they got the own goal, Dawson's own goal, and then you thought, okay, now it's going to be like the Stoke game, or it's going to be like the Manchester United game. It wasn't. And you just think about the contrast of yesterday, and we're going to get to Leicester in a minute, but just the feeling around that ground, the feeling around just the football world, with the way Leicester went about their business yesterday, and we thought, okay, they did this emphatically, but Spurs are still going to keep the pressure on them, and they've got to go to Old Trafford next week. And then they've got an Everton team after that with a manager who's going to be fighting for his life. You never know what can happen there, and we're thinking we're playing the scenario ahead. But Tony Pulis's teams always tend to get results in these sorts of games.
They're annoying. They're so annoying. It's not Tony Pulis's job to be anything but annoying. In fact, annoying in this context is a compliment, but they are habitually annoying.
I mean, they did it in obviously a different manner, but they did it to Liverpool 2 seasons ago when that decided the title race that year. When Pulis threw caution to the wind, let Palace go for it in the second half, down 3-0, and lo and behold, they got 3 goals back.
Yeah.
And it happened the previous time with Stoke spoiling somebody at the very end of the season. I cannot remember who it was, but this is the third time in about 5 or 6 seasons this has happened with one of his sides.
Interesting. It's just not a team you want to face, because I don't think Spurs were terrible today. They obviously weren't as good as they've been the last couple of weeks, but this is a game that they've drawn or got a win in other circumstances this year. They obviously got a draw on Monday too, but I just don't feel like killing Spurs over this one. Getting a draw against West Brom, yeah, you don't want it. And I saw somebody retweet something from Ian Dark that said maybe Spurs weren't up to the occasion. Maybe this is just a result that happens occasionally over 38 games. It happens a lot over the 38 games. And it's ill-timed for Spurs. I just don't think it's a terrible result. It's just one that's probably means that the title race is over.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that Spurs, you just have to think about it being a missed opportunity perhaps for them. But at the same time, they've come so far this season. I mean, at the beginning of the season, when I was saying Spurs were going to finish in the top four, I was being laughed out of every conversation, including, I believe, on this podcast by our colleague Lawrence McKenna, who just thought that was absurd, that I thought Spurs were going to finish ahead of Liverpool, was one of the teams he took objection to, and I thought Spurs could finish ahead of Manchester United. And again, I didn't have them second, I had them fourth. But that was a laughable notion, and we're getting caught up in the Leicester City story, but I think Spurs and West Ham United, West Ham is very unlucky not to be in third or fourth right now themselves in the league. I think those are stories we have to take also from this season, and then look at the collective youth of the Spurs squad and the long-term plan Pochettino had, and the fact that Spurs, for once, Daniel Levy has taken a hands-off approach. He trusts his manager, and he's letting his manager build something long-term, something different, something special, not based on going and raiding the continent and overpaying for players and then trying to flip them after 2 years. This is a very different Spurs, and they're going to go from fifth last season to almost certainly second this season. That's serious progress, and that's a progress with a young manager. Now the key, and we'll talk more about this in the next few weeks, make sure he doesn't leave. I don't think Pochettino wants to leave, but Richard, you and I know how Manchester United and Real Madrid, how they'll queue up for his services and the kind of offers they'll make to him. So Spurs have got to make sure he stays long-term.
Yeah, things are lining up for Spurs. It looks like there's not the big push to get him out, at least this coming offseason. We've heard Manchester United links, but it seems like Manchester United has other people in mind. Real Madrid's probably going to go into next year with Zidane. PSG has some other people seemingly linked to them if they move on from Laurent Blanc. In another year, though, people will be lining up for Pochettino, so maybe they'll have another year to consolidate at White Hart Lane. Well, I guess I have to get used to not saying White Hart Lane here, huh? That's kind of weird. Let's talk about the other team at the top of the table. Talk about them briefly, because it was a very convincing performance by Leicester. 4-0 victory over Swansea, taking advantage of an early error by Ashley Williams. Riyad Mahrez scores the opening goal. Leo Ulloa, filling in for Jamie Vardy, had two of his own. Mark Albrighton finishing the scoring late. Kartik, I say there's not much to talk about here, because at this point of the season, like you said, even though they'd been allowing some goals at some point in the season, not scoring goals at others, everything seems to be clicking for them. Leicester is surging towards this title.
Yeah, and now it's not just a matter that they're going to win the title. This isn't going to be them winning the title on the final day like Blackburn did, the other real underdog story, although less of an underdog story than this Leicester team. It looks like they might win this title by 5 to 7 points.
They could win it, they can win it this coming weekend.
Right, they could win it with a couple of weeks to spare. Just quickly from this game, this is how much Leicester is on everyone's mind. So we have our Fort Lauderdale Strikers game. I'm once again consulting for the team. I played Jackson Moore Armada the other night in the NASL. We have our post-game meal with the communications staff. What are we talking about at our post-game meal? Well, we first talk about our game and the officiating. Then we're talking about, do you think he's going to go to a 4-2-3? And by he, I mean Ranieri. 4-2-3-1 tomorrow. Who's he going to put in? Is Mahrez going to play in the hole? Everybody in the football world, doesn't matter if it's lower division soccer here in the United States, like the Strikers, team out in Qatar, Thailand, everyone is talking about Leicester City. The conversation inevitably turns to them. And we ended up having this long conversation. You think Mahrez is going to play in the hole, maybe, and you play Okazaki up top? Do you bring a Joa in? What about Jeffrey Schlupp? Albrighton? I didn't see Albrighton getting dropped. I thought what would happen is Albrighton might move to the right, play Schlupp on the left, move Mahrez into Okazaki's position, push Okazaki up. And then the other question was maybe Andy King starts in that position and you drop him back a little bit and you play him behind Okazaki. Mm-hmm. What Ranieri, in fact, did was start Ulloa in Okazaki's position, start Okazaki in Vardy's position, but then get the pace from starting Schlupp instead of Albrighton. And what a team guy Albrighton is. He started the last 28 games, I think it was, and he sat in this match for tactical considerations because you need Schlupp's pace without Vardy in the team, and he takes it like a teammate. He applauds Schlupp off the pitch when he comes in to sub in for him late, goes on and gets a goal of his own. And I have to tell you, the other thing that I just really loved was Ulloa is a guy that was the focal point of the attack under Nigel Pearson. Mm-hmm. Strong, tall target player, not tall, but strong, big target player, target on set pieces, which is the way Pearson liked to play. And he's been very much out of the mix this season, almost a forgotten man. When he's been called upon the last 2 weeks, he's come through in a big way. And he scored an Ulloa goal in this game, a set-piece goal, which is like what he did last year, which is why Pearson preferred him for much of the season to Vardy. So what we're seeing is the guys that Ranieri has made focal points of this team that were kind of on the outs last year, which were Albrighton and Drinkwater in particular, those two guys, and Vardy to a lesser extent, now have carried them towards this championship. But then they're getting support from the guys that Ranieri had kind of discarded that were core Pearson players, like Schlupp, who's had a lot of injuries. That's part of the reason he's been discarded this year more, and Ojoa. That just tells you what a fantastic spirit they've got. Even though Ranieri is not the tinker man as much this season, he's still able to tinker enough to get those results, much like he did in the Watford game a few weeks ago. Remember, that was a real critical point when Spurs were making a run, and it looked like Arsenal might get back into the race also. Made those two changes at halftime and won that game. Fantastic. This is their title. They've earned it. I know I've read all these articles that Spurs are the best team in England, but how can you argue with the record? Leicester are not only in front in the table, they're now 7 points ahead through 35 rounds. It's hard to make an argument that somebody else is a better team than they are.
For much of this year, at least a couple of months on this podcast, we were bemoaning how weak this league was because nobody was on pace at certain points of the season to even reach 75 points.
Yes.
Leicester's at 76 now with three games left. I think low 80s, potential 85. That's what they're on course to get. It's a very respectable
It's like a normal year. A normal year then. 87 for Chelsea last year, 86 for Man City the year before, 89 the 2 years before, and those were kind of high watermarks. Mm-hmm. 80 the year before that. So it turns out, but again, I think the rest of the league is weaker. Manchester City could finish third with less points than they finished fifth with less points than they finished third, far fewer points than they finished third, second with. They could finish with fewer points than the team that finished fifth in 2012-13 season had, but Leicester has pulled away. Final thing I'll say about this, Richard, is I did a projection I think it's now been two months or so, that played out the rest of the season when there were about 14 rounds left, and I had Leicester winning the league by 1 point over Spurs, mm-hmm. 2 points over Arsenal. If I remember correctly, I have to go back and look at that article, I had Leicester finishing on 74, Spurs on 73, Arsenal on 72 or 71. Yeah. So they've already gotten past that through 35 rounds. We were thinking which team was going to catch fire. One of these teams was going to catch fire, Man City, Arsenal, or Spurs, and Leicester was definitely going to fade. As it turns out, they're the team that caught fire, and they were already top of the table. So they pulled away. Now they're 12 points clear of both Arsenal and Man City, who have been eliminated, and 7 points clear of Spurs. So one of the stories is we kept trying to find holes to poke in Leicester, and there are none.
Yeah. We're talking about how the fact that they're surging towards the title, they're not only on top of the actual table, they're now on top of the form table too. 5 wins in their last six. Nobody can claim to have a better form record than that. Tottenham, as you mentioned, are 7 points behind, 69 points. They are 5 points up on both Manchester City and Arsenal. Those teams hold the last two Champions League spots. I know some people get upset when we call fourth place a Champions League spot. An English club has never been knocked out in that play-in round, so technically, yeah, they're not in Champions League yet. History tells us they are going to be. Fifth place Manchester United, though, as you've alluded to earlier in the show, they are 5 points back of those spots, but now, because of the FA Cup weekend, they have a match in hand. If they take that match in hand, they'll be up to 62 points. I think we definitely have to consider them in this race. Let's talk about the two teams that are tied for third in the league, Kartik, because they had very different weekends. Manchester City, a relatively easy weekend against a Stoke team that is fading silently into their good night this season. And then Arsenal, finding another way to drop points. 0-0 result at Sunderland, which I gotta admit, this doesn't seem like it's that bad. I mean, Sunderland is fighting for their Premier League lives. Arsenal was on the road. Sunderland has been playing decently for the last couple months, as you've reminded us. So on one level, a 0-0 draw at there isn't that big a deal. On the other hand, you just want to see Arsenal play good for a couple games in a row, and it's been a while since you could say that about them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, given their tendency to be very inconsistent, and considering they've got Norwich next, maybe they're going to play very well in this game and give Sunderland a big break. I just don't know what to say, though, about Arsenal. They just do not have the mentality to compete at a high level. It's just that simple.
It seems like it, and I think a lot of people have, in light of the league's best 11 coming out this week, Mesut Ozil not being on it, a lot of people looking at him, saying that his form has dipped from the beginning of the season, which is unquestionably true, but Mesut Ozil was playing on an unreal level for 4 months this season, and the fact that nobody has picked up the slack, and the fact that our worst fears that we talked about while Mesut Ozil was so good, well, what if Mesut Ozil goes back to being the Mesut Ozil usually is, which is for a couple months he might fade away, and nobody has stepped up. We seem to find new reasons to be concerned about Arsenal every show. I don't want to dive into it too much, but a lot of our worst fears about Arsenal have come true over the last month of the season. It'll be very interesting to see if they can hold off Manchester United for that last spot. Of course, City is in the same boat. The difference is City seems to be surging right now. Arsenal is not. Keep walking down the table. Sixth place, West Ham United. They now have a match in hand. They were off this weekend. They are 5 points off of fourth place. Liverpool is 6 points off of fourth place. They also have a match in hand. We're going to talk about their result in a second. Southampton is the other team that is still vaguely in the Europa League / Champions League picture. That I can't say that with a straight face. Southampton is only 1 point behind Liverpool. They have played their full 35 matches at this point. Kartik, let's focus at the other end of the table. We talked about Sunderland for a little bit. They are now out of the drop. 31 points through 34 games is the same as Norwich, but their superior goal difference, they have a 7-goal edge in that column, gives them 17th place. Newcastle United is 1 point behind both those teams. Norwich and Sunderland are only on 34 games played. Newcastle with 30 points is on 35. Let's talk about the Magpies for a second, because I think they got a point that a lot of people didn't expect them to get this weekend. Against a Liverpool team that has been playing very well both in league and Europa League, Newcastle got a 2-2 result at Anfield. I wouldn't say shocked by this, Kartik, but this is the kind of result that we've been waiting for ever since Rafa Benitez got the job.
Yeah! It was a stunner. I don't know if that point keeps them in the league. It might not, but if it does, wow. They came from behind. They just look a different side. And I know we don't want to overstate the importance of managers. I think poor Steve McLaren, he was just the wrong guy, right? He's the wrong guy for every job, it seems like.
Yeah, recently. At this point.
The difference is noticeable, and I'll tell you why it's noticeable. It's not just the results, and I'm not sure they get out of this. I think the Benitez appointment may have still come too late, right? It might have come a couple weeks too late, but they look much more organized. They're not giving up these kind of weak goals because of bad giveaways and stupid cynical fouls. Like they were the entire season under McLaren until he got the sack. And there was a resiliency, there was a fight back in this club that they have come from behind in two successive games against Manchester City and Liverpool, teams that are much better than them. In fact, against Manchester City, they were unlucky. They should have won that game. Sergio Aguero's goal clearly offside. I mean, not even close. I don't know how the linesman missed that. And other than that, they really shut Manchester City down. Manchester City, who've been in very good form, as you mentioned, both in Europe and in league over the course of the last month, or basically since Kevin De Bruyne got back, they shut them down. And this Liverpool game, look, they were bad in the first half. Liverpool was playing as well as they've been playing the last few weeks, but the second half, Benitez made it very simple. They were compact. They hit Liverpool on the break. They got numbers, some individual mismatches. If anything, at the end of that match, it felt like Newcastle might get a third and steal all 3 points. So the big question for Magpies supporters is, was the appointment made too late? And if it was, what incentive does Rafa Benitez have to not exercise that break clause in his deal with Mike Ashley and stay and manage you in the championship? Because it's hard to see a manager like Rafa Benitez, who was managing Real Madrid just a little while ago, managing in the championship next season. But the way Benitez organizes his teams, that might be the surest bet you can make for Newcastle to come right back up. Otherwise, it's anyone's guess. The championship is extremely competitive. If there's some way to keep him as the manager and keep him happy, wanting to manage in the championship, then do it. If he's going to leave, you're going to need to go after someone like David Moyes, who's available. Yeah, but I thought Newcastle was very good. And Richard, maybe they get out of this. They have a shot.
It's entirely possible. As bad as they were playing a couple weeks ago, they have 5 points through their last three games. If they get 5 points through their next three games, their last three games, they probably have a pretty decent chance of staying up, considering neither Sunderland nor Norwich have proven that they can really.
It's also worth noting they play Aston Villa. One of those three games is against Aston Villa.
Other matches this weekend that we haven't talked about just because there weren't very many implications associated with them. Aston Villa loses at home to Southampton 4-2. Southampton getting two goals from Dusan Tadic in that game. And then Chelsea, with two goals from Eden Hazard, win at Bournemouth 4-1. Let's take our trip into Europe very quickly. There isn't a lot to talk about in Germany anymore, although we could talk about Christian Pulisic some more. I feel like even though he's still performing well there, I feel like we talked about the significance of Pulisic last week. Really, the biggest story in, aside from Champions League, probably the biggest story in European soccer is the race in Spain, where last week you and I were expressing tons of doubt about Barcelona. They had fallen into a tie for first place with Atletico Madrid at the top of La Liga. Since then, they've had two victories, Kartik, where they've outscored their opponents by a combined 14 goals, 14-0. One, their form did not hint that they were capable of that right now. They had given back 7 points in the previous three rounds. But secondly, with only three matches left to play and Barcelona seemingly finding their stride, so to speak, I think it's not too difficult to imagine them winning their last three games and winning this league.
Yeah. You know, I think that their win against Deportivo was really, well, not only was it 8-0, but it was really important, right, for Barcelona's confidence. And that looked like that was the toughest game remaining on the docket for them. But Atleti continues to get results, and Real Madrid is somehow getting results. I don't know. I still think Barca might drop points in one of these last three matches. Yeah. And Atleti's not going to. Although, I shouldn't say that, because Atleti and Real Madrid both have Champions League to worry about, which could create... Wait, can you believe we're talking about Barcelona being the team that doesn't have to worry about Champions League of the three?
Yeah, it's weird. We've just gotten so used to Barcelona performing so well. But again, that just goes back to how good Atletico Madrid is. And like you hinted, they're perfectly capable of taking 9 points from these last three games. They beat Malaga this weekend 1-0. Some controversy there with Diego Simeone. We don't have to get too deep into that, because the story here really is, It really is whether Barcelona can win these last three games. I mean, they're all against teams that they should be beating. There's no huge battles here. They play Real Betis and Espanyol over the next two games. I think it's, at this point, like you mentioned, the Deport match looked like it was probably one of their more difficult ones remaining. It was on the road. They scored 8 goals in that one. I think, if anything, that tells me that they've woken up.
Yeah, well, I thought that was going to be their toughest match, and I actually thought they might drop points, more points in that game. Maybe it was a matter of timing, coming just days after the Valencia game, where they pulled out of their funk, and it really made a big difference if they pulled out of their funk in that game. So, yeah, maybe they're home free now. I don't know. I just have an expectation that Atleti's is going to see this thing out, get all 9 points, and put pressure on Barcelona. And if something goes wrong, if there's a mistake at the back by Jordi Alba or by Pique, I mean, we're seeing, I think Mascherano has still played pretty well, but the rest of their back line has been poor. I think you've got a big problem.
No, I mean, one of the things they did over this last week was benching Dani Alves because of his poor play. Maybe that woke them up. Maybe it reminded them that Luis Enrique is still willing to make some changes, even though these next two games are going to be heavily favored, and their most difficult match remaining this year is going to be the Copa del Rey final against Sevilla. Bundesliga, both Bayern and Borussia Dortmund won. Bayern is 7 points up on BVB with three matches to play there, so one more win or one more BVB loss gets them a fourth straight title, which would be the first time in the modern Bundesliga history that that has happened, remarkable as that is. Probably beyond La Liga, I'm qualifying this because I don't know how to put into context how interesting the championship race is at this point, because a lot of people are just not going to be interested in a second division race. That's perfectly fine. For those of the people that are interested in it, we had a shakeup at the top this week because Middlesbrough had a difficult week. They came into this week leading the league, but then had a very difficult match against Burnley midweek. They ended up drawing that one. And then they drew the weekend at home against Ipswich. As a result, Burnley is now technically in first place on 87 points with a plus 33 goal difference. Middlesbrough also 87 points, plus 32 goal difference. But Brighton continues to win. They are now tied for first place, 87 points, technically in third place, though, with a plus 30 goal difference. Further down the table in the championship, it's still the same teams, still in the same order. All of them drew this weekend. Hull drew at home with Leeds 2-2. They're on 77 points. No chance at this point, no realistic chance at this point, at least, to get into the top two spots. Actually, no mathematical chance either at this point. The championship is into its last 2 weeks. Derby is also on 77 points after drawing this weekend at home against Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield Wednesday still in sixth place in that league. Kartik, let's shift our
focus. Well, by the way, Brighton and Middlesbrough are playing the final match of the season.
Ooh.
At the Riverside. So
that's very likely going to be for one of those two.
Right. Spots. So basically, so Burnley controls their own destiny. If they win both games, they'll be on 93 points, and there's no way that both the other two teams can get 93 points.
Yeah.
But I guess if
Burnley teams takes 4 points from these last two games, they're going to be up.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So very interesting.
So I think all three teams technically control their own destiny because of that last match. So it's
very true.
It's going to be fascinating. And let me tell you something. If you're that close to going up automatically and you end up in the playoff, that third team, I wouldn't want to be them because psychologically, that's very tough to turn around and then try. And
it makes me nauseous even thinking about it.
Yeah.
So that match is going to be at the Riverside Stadium on the last day of the season, May 7th. Brighton, though, has won 5 in a row. They're clearly the hottest team in the second division. Kartik, let's shift our focus to Champions League here very quickly and talk about Manchester City. It's already been revealed that they're going to be without Yaya Toure for the first leg of their Champions League semifinal. That's going to be on Tuesday. It's going to be in Manchester. It's going to be against Real Madrid. Tell me what your thoughts are on this matchup. I think losing Yaya Toure is big, but they have shown that they're capable of playing without him.
Have shown they're capable of playing without him, but if you'll remember the last time these two teams played in Champions League at the Bernabeu, actually that leg, not the leg in Manchester in the group stage in 2012, Yaya Toure was just marauding on the counterattack, set up a beautiful goal to Dzeko, was really almost unplayable defensively for Real Madrid in that game. Now, that was 4 seasons ago, but still, you know that they really view him as a major threat, particularly with some of the defensive deficiencies we've seen from Real Madrid. So I think they're going to feel relieved by this. It appears Cristiano will play, Cristiano Ronaldo. We'll see how effective he is. Mm-hmm. But it should be a competitive game. I mean, look, the Manchester City seem to be a completely different team when Kevin De Bruyne is fit. And that's been the case throughout much of the season, both in the league and in Europe. And De Bruyne is fit right now and is feeling confident. And he's going to be well-rested because he did not play at the weekend against Stoke. They didn't need him in that game, obviously. So he's gonna come on probably fairly refreshed, and anything could happen. This is going to be very interesting, this matchup.
You got De Bruyne playing, you've got Aguero in form, you've got a chance. And the difficulty for me looking at this is we just don't know how big the divide is between Spain and England, which of course means nothing once two teams get on the field, but how much we really know about these two teams is affected by what we see from them week in and week out. And so much evidence suggests that these Spanish teams are on another level. So we're going to find out. We're going to find out if Manchester City can ascend to that level, because it looked very much that they were slightly better than PSG, and that's probably the same thing you could say about PSG's relationship to Real Madrid in group stage. Whether that tells us enough about this matchup, I'm not really sure. The more entertaining of the semifinals to me, Kartik, I don't know if you feel the same way, is Atletico versus Bayern Munich because of the pure stylistic contrast between the two. You have the best defensive team in the world in Atletico, and against Pierre. Pierre. That's what he's going to be named when he goes and coaches PSG. Pep Guardiola and Bayern Munich, certainly one of the best tacticians in the world, and a team that can really score on anybody when things are going right. I just don't know who to pick in this one, Kartik. In fact, I'm not going to pick. I have no idea what this matchup is going to play out like. I'm really looking forward to it, though.
Yeah, I think that this is going to be tough, right, for Bayern, unless they're firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, but then it's like, you think to yourself, it is definitely going to be tough, but does that mean they, instead of scoring 5 goals and winning this one 5-2, they only score 2 goals and win it 2-1? I don't know.
Well, that's possible, right?
Yeah.
So it is going to be a tough one.
And we saw what Atletico did against Barcelona, which is cut from very much the same cloth that this Bayern Munich team has been woven from, and you wonder how it's going to be different for Bayern when Barcelona was never really in control of their tie against Atletico, even though they got those 2 goals when Fernando Torres went out. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, it seemed like Atleti, look, and I think a lot of people agree with this, and some of it is with hindsight, but Atleti probably would have just crushed them. Not crushed them, but it would have been 1-0, 1-0 over 2 legs had Torres not gotten sent off. So I think that there's a general sense that that this was a situation where they were able to really dictate the tempo and the style of play and put their authority on the tie with Barcelona. Now, the general assumption is Bayern isn't any better than Barcelona, and stylistically they're very similar. So I think people, maybe we're all overreading this, overreacting. People are just assuming Atleti is gonna put their foot on Bayern, and that's going to be that. And we saw large stretches of Bayern's tie in the round of 16 with Juventus, where they look decidedly second best. Mm-hmm. That having been said, when they were good in that tie, they were very good. And Juve is not as slouched defensively. No, they're not Atleti, but they're not exactly a side that leaks goals either. And they were opened up fairly easily when Bayern wanted to play.
I think a lot of us want to see Atletico in the final just because of the Cinderella story that they are. But at the same time, Bayern might be the most talented team in the world. We'll have to see how it plays out. We're going to be back with you midweek to talk about those matchups. We're going to look forward to Liverpool in Europa League trying to win their own Champions League spot. They're in the final 4 of that tournament. But until then, for everybody at World Soccer Talk, I'm Richard Farley. Kartik?
Enjoy your football.
The World Soccer Talk podcast is a production of World Soccer Talk and is executive produced by Christopher Harris and produced by Richard Farley. You can get the podcast a number of different ways, including Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, and Audioboom, or you can go to worldsoccertalk.com to download the show directly. To get in touch with one of the hosts, you can reach out to them on Twitter. I'm Richard Farley. Kartik is KKFLA737. Lawrence is LOZCAST, Lawscast. And Nipun is Nipun Chopra 7. Don't want to bother with Twitter? Go ahead and reach out via email. Richard@worldsoccertalk.com.